news, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus, you won't know if you don't listen.
And again, I thank you so much for joining me. This is Anita Rufus. You are listening to iHub Radio. The phone number here, if you want to get in on the conversation, is 760-544-8255. We'd be happy to have you join in the conversation. I will also share with you, I have a friend who said, well, I was going to call in, but I was afraid somebody would, you know who it was. And I said, well, you know, you don't have to give your real name. Well, I thought maybe they'd recognize my voice. Okay, you can always send a comment or a question by email to studio@ihubradio.com, or you can text 760-699-0202. And for what it's worth, even if you live in one of those gated communities that seems to be all right-wing conservatives, it's okay to have your own opinion and to put it out on the air. It really is. I've been doing it for years. Okay. Some more of the news that is kind of like watch what they're doing instead of what they're saying. I mentioned a couple weeks ago that the president had put out this policy that would allow states to deny taking in any refugees. Well, Governor Greg Abbott of Texas has said he will reject resettlement of any new refugees. First state known to do so under this recent Trump administration order. Texas, by the way, has long been a leader in settling refugees. And you know what a refugee is. I'm not talking about migrant workers. I'm not talking about illegal immigrants. I'm talking about people who are fleeing wars or who are fleeing persecution or who are fleeing situations like floods or tsunamis or fires. Now, I would be willing to bet you that the president didn't intend this to mean that if there are any Australians trying to escape the fires, that they wouldn't be allowed in. We all know what kind of people he's talking about when he talks about states being able to deny taking in refugees. In any event, declaring in 2015 that Texas would not welcome people from Syria following the deadly attacks in Paris, remember that? Trump said that agencies must get written consent from state and local officials in any jurisdiction where they want to help resettle refugees, because the way it's worked in the past, refugees come into this country and they are sent to various states, often, for example, where we know there are large populations of people from their same area, so they can settle in an area where they feel comfortable and accepted and don't have to start just from scratch. Anyway, they're supposed to get written consent from the state. The Trump administration has already slashed the number of refugees that are even allowed into the country. This year, we're going to take a total of 18,000, where last year we took in about 30,000. And in the past, we've taken in many more, depending on what's going on around the world. Governors in 42 states have said they will consent to allowing in more refugees. Good for them. North Dakota, for one, has been a haven for refugees. They want more people to come in to fill the jobs that are open, because as economies in a state that is lightly populated like North Dakota, they need people to do service jobs. They need people behind the counters. They need people dishing up food. They need people cleaning people's apartments. And refugees need those kinds of jobs to get themselves resettled in a brand new country. So North Dakota, for one, has been a haven for taking in refugees. But the president, in justifying this policy where agencies of the government have to get consent from the governor of a state before they can send refugees to that state. Trump has said that many refugees are criminals, and states can now decide individually whether they want to accept them. It's not up to the government anymore. And I misspoke just slightly when I was talking about refugees. Refugees are those who are escaping conditions that are impossible for them to live, like a civil war or some kind of natural disaster. There's another category of people that we let in that are called asylum seekers. These are people who, in fact, are concerned that they face possible death because they are openly gay, or they've spoken out against the government and their family is at risk. They're seeking asylum. And we've had a lot of people coming up from Central America that led to the president's policy of trying to shut down the border entirely, and the policy where they are now making people, even who are appealing for asylum, to stay in Mexico, not to stay in the United States waiting for their court hearing to come up. And by the way, those seeking asylum, about 90% of them actually do show up for their court hearing. Well, there are Mexican nationals who are now seeking asylum in the United States. And that remain in Mexico policy, where somebody from Guatemala who wants asylum has to wait in Mexico. International law forbids asylum seekers from being sent back to their home country to wait, because they may, in fact, face persecution, which is why they're trying to leave in the first place. Well, Mexicans account for more than half of the about 21,000 asylum seekers who are waiting along the U.S.-Mexico border right now. But by international law, they can't be kept in Mexico if they are Mexicans seeking asylum. So now the United States is going to send Mexican asylum seekers to Guatemala. It makes one want to scream. Am I screaming on the air right now? I do that sometimes. Here's a story that I had heard almost nothing about, and I think it's a really important story. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti and Housing Secretary Ben Carson have been negotiating about money and federal land to try and alleviate the homelessness problem in L.A. Garcetti and Carson have been speaking, and the discussions have included negotiations about federal money and federal land because they need to expand and accelerate federal investment in confronting homelessness around the country, not just in California. Mental health treatment has to be one of the top ingredients in this, because a lot of the people who are homeless are, in fact, suffering from mental illness of one kind or another. It needs to include job training. It needs to include outreach to veterans, because of the number of veterans, especially those who have been suffering from PTSD after coming back from serving overseas, who desperately need support services that have to come not just from the local authorities or the state, but from the federal government. Now, clearly, the Trump administration has been feuding with California, because he's been demagoguing the homelessness problem in L.A., saying things like, big cities that oppose him politically are poorly run and dangerous, and that's why homelessness is such a big problem. They floated plans, the administration floated plans, that would involve more aggressive crackdowns on the homeless, sweeps of Skid Row encampments, which, by the way, have been ruled unconstitutional by the courts. But clearly something has to be done, and L.A. has a particularly large problem. So Trump appeared to be offering kind of a ceasefire on all of this, tweeting an invitation. for cities and states to ask for federal help to try and ease this homelessness problem. He said, if the city or state in question is willing to acknowledge responsibility and politely asks for help from the federal government, we will seriously consider getting involved in order to make those poorly run Democrat cities great again. What a creep. Meanwhile, Governor Gavin Newsom, California governor, is asking state lawmakers to allocate more than $1.4 billion in his new budget to help alleviate this homelessness crisis. Here's another thing they're doing, regardless of what you hear them talking about. They're changing the rules to help bankers, and in the process, to hurt poor neighborhoods. There's something called the Community Reinvestment Act. It's been in place since 1977. And the purpose of it was to make sure that businesses, that banks that have branch offices in areas that are poor, that those banks, in fact, invest in those communities where they have offices, where they do business with residents. Banks don't like to lend in low-income neighborhoods, but they profit from the deposits that people who live in those neighborhoods put into those banks. So the Community Reinvestment Act forced the issue, requiring banks to give mortgages and small business loans and other services in all the areas where they operate. Excuse me. Now, the banking regulators who have been picked by the president are proposing to let banks pump less money into low-income communities and claim credit for lending that doesn't really benefit those communities. For example, they could invest in improving the sound system of a sports arena that just happens to be in a poor neighborhood, and they could call that an investment in the community. The controller of the currency is pushing these changes. He previously worked as the chief executive of One West Bank, and these are the kinds of swamp people that the president is, in fact, appointing to positions where they're supposed to oversee the very things that they used to be lobbying for. You know, the government is supposed to be acting on behalf of the people, and a lot of times they're not. And this administration, rather than draining the swamp, is putting the alligators in control. This is nuts. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. You are listening to iHub Radio.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I'm talking about things that are happening that you might not know about. Watch what they're doing. Disability benefits. Again, this is something I haven't heard talked about much because, you know, with Iran and impeachment and Iowa coming up in less than a month, there's no time to talk about things that might actually affect the way we live. Disability benefits. Some Americans could lose their Social Security disability benefits under a recent Trump administration proposal. And if you're disabled and you're relying on this, this is something you do need to know about. Under the proposed change, the government would look more closely at whether certain disability insurance recipients still qualify as disabled after they've already been awarded the benefits. Now, look, I will acknowledge there are some people who, you know, apply for disability because they just don't want to work anymore and they hurt themselves in some way and they limp around. And then, of course, we see video of them playing tennis. Yes, there are some people who try and rip off the system. And yes, there are some doctors who are more than happy to help people rip off the system. But there are a whole lot of people who are seriously disabled and cannot work and need the help. And this is an insurance benefit under Social Security. So the government would, under this change, the government would look more closely at whether certain disability insurance recipients are still disabled after they've already been approved to get those disability benefits. Now, it is already true that they have to demonstrate continuing disability every few years in order to continue to receive the benefits. But this proposal that is being made by the administration would ramp up these examinations. They're saying that the extra reviews will help maintain appropriate stewardship of the disability program, arguing that the current rules fail to account fully for the possibility of medical improvement. It's just one of several unilateral moves that the Trump administration has made against social programs that make it easier for people to survive if they can't work in the labor market. These kinds of proposals are the president's way of sending a political message that he is cracking down on those people who just take and don't really put anything back into the system. It's not unlike Ronald Reagan talking about Cadillac welfare recipients. Democrats and advocates for the disability community have said that these proposed new regulations would only hurt disabled people, that it has not been vetted. In other words, they haven't really looked at what the impact of it would be. And they want the rulemaking process to at least be delayed, because this is a program that is run through the administrative branch of government. The Social Security Administration is part of the executive branch. They don't need to go back to Congress to change anything. This would just be a change in the rules. This is just how we're going to look at these things from now on. More than 8 million Americans receive disability benefits based on their past employment and a loss of wage income due to a severe disability. More than 8 million Americans. But the administration wants to make sure that people don't just take. Now, here's another one. The administration makes it look like they're doing something. But there's an Environmental Protection Agency plan that would reduce truck pollution, but also stop tougher state controls on pollution. Again, the administration is taking a first step toward curbing highway emissions of nitrogen dioxide, which has been linked to asthma and other respiratory kinds of diseases. The trucking industry had asked for a national regulation to override states because, for example, California has tougher rules than a lot of the other parts of the country. Public health experts have said that the Environmental Protection Agency proposal falls far short of what is necessary to significantly prevent respiratory illness and premature death. But the administration wants to make it easier. Nasty old California shouldn't be able to regulate emissions. Here's a bill that has been proposed in the state of Vermont. Cell phone users under the age of 21 could go to jail. What? You may be old enough to drive and to vote and to join the military and even to buy a lottery ticket, but in Vermont, if you're under 21, you may not be able to get a cell phone. The person who proposed the bill in the state legislature said the use of cell phones while driving is one of the leading killers of teenagers. More than 1.6 million automobile crashes each year. They use cell phones to bully and threaten other young people. They're linked to many suicides. He said, I probably wouldn't vote for the bill myself. I have no delusion that it's going to pass. But hey, it's a way to highlight an issue, isn't it? This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. You are listening to iHub Radio.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
Okay, I want to talk briefly right now about 2020. Iowa's coming, the Iowa caucuses are coming up in less than a month, and then New Hampshire's going to vote. There are some candidates, Tuesday, the 14th is another Democratic debate before Iowa. And a lot of candidates have been working very hard on the ground who have not made it onto the debate stage or who have not gotten enough poll results to qualify. There are other candidates like Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York, who are just spending tons of money and not focusing on Iowa or New Hampshire, but are just trying to get, in the case of Bloomberg, he wants Super Tuesday states to go for him. I will say this. Any Democrat who wants a candidate who is not for sure going to beat Donald Trump is a fool. And all of the candidates have made it clear that whoever does get chosen out of this process will be supported by everyone else. And so the real question for me is, who can beat Trump out of this field? I don't think it's going to be Bernie Sanders. I don't think he can beat Trump for a couple of reasons. Number one, he isn't even a Democrat. He's running as a Democrat, but he is an independent and a self-described socialist. Democratic socialist, not communist kind of socialist. But nevertheless, I think that he cannot beat Trump because that will be easy to run against. Plus, he's Jewish. I mean, I'm sorry, I hate to say this out loud, but neither Bernie Sanders nor Michael Bloomberg is going to end up being president. We're not there yet. We haven't even been able to get over our prejudices against a woman being president, for God's sake. I don't think we're ready to have a gay president either and watch him dance with his husband at the inaugural ball. I just don't think we're there. I think Pete Buttigieg would make a great vice president and it would give him some time to mature in office. The thing I am concerned about with regard to 2020 is the involvement of something like Russia and chaos and trolling and false flag operations, especially online. The National Security Agency and its British counterpart have issued a warning that the Russians are back and they are getting stealthier. Groups that are linked to Russia's intelligence agencies have been uncovered boring into the network of an elite Iranian hacking unit and attacking governments and private companies in the Middle East and in Britain, hoping that it's Iran that will be blamed. So they're hacking through Iranian online hacking units and doing mischief in the Middle East and in England. So we've already had an ugly campaign season, and we're not even nearly heading toward what it will be. once there really is a Democratic nominee and Trump goes after that person, hook, line, and sinker. Fake ads that are being paid for in rubles from Russia. Self-proclaimed Texas secessionists who are logging in from St. Petersburg in Russia. These are the kinds of things that are already up there. And Facebook, for one, is looking for threats that it didn't even realize existed in 2016. Political campaigns are really not spending the money that it would take to set up effective cyber defenses. And we're still primed to swallow fake news. So, for example, there was an altered video of Joe Biden where he was supposedly making racist statements at a campaign event. All it takes is a few Twitter accounts that a lot of people follow to get something like this out into the public consciousness. And this doctored video of Joe Biden was picked up by some conservative outlets on Twitter. They were the first to share the video. Then it began to pick up traction on Twitter as similarly minded conservatives picked it up and retweeted it. Then it moved to other platforms, especially in the darker corners of the internet, places like 4chan. The number 4, C-H-A-N, is one of those dark web sites that is full of anti-Semitic and racist rhetoric. They picked it up. Facebook and Reddit picked it up. And once they picked it up, then the news media picked it up because it became a thing. Multi-platforms spreading and expanding the universe of who gets exposed to this kind of disinformation makes attempts to stop it almost impossible. So when mainstream news unintentionally amplifies the problem, then you end up with millions of people watching this video and claiming, well, after all, they saw it on Facebook and some of their best friends were putting it up on Facebook. So obviously it must be true that Joe Biden made these racist statements. Now, let's be honest, there were some news outlets that had every intention of putting this video out there. And often the central goal of this kind of disinformation campaign is making a feedback loop through major news outlets. Because then, if somebody tries to find out whether it's true, they go to Google and they search and they find more sites that seem to validate what they saw. And therefore, it must be true. This is something we have to be really smart about watching in this upcoming election, because there's a lot of mischief going on. And it's not benign, and it's not cute, and it's not funny, and it's not even political. It's pernicious, and it has no goal other than to confuse and defraud the public to get a particular political outcome. Now, in another story about online mischief, online corruption, online crime, a company called TravelX, T-R-A-V-E-L-E-X, TravelX, which is a currency exchange company. You know, you go overseas and you've got dollars and you want to trade them in for euros. You go to a currency exchange place at the airport and they make a little bit of money off of every transaction. and you get the currency you need to be able to shop locally. Well, Travelex has been offline since New Year's Eve after they were hacked and held hostage for ransom. They said they had contained the threat and there was no evidence that they had that customer data had been removed, because when you go up to one of their service outlets, you've got to give in for, you know, identification and whatever. They weren't able to offer online service at all after this happened, only over-the-counter service. And it turns out that this kind of disruption has also affected other financial institutions like Barclays Bank and the Royal Bank of Scotland. They've been unable to provide travel money to their customers because Travelex has been offline as a result of this hostage demand. The hackers wanted $6 million for sensitive customer data, which they claim to have downloaded since gaining access to the Travelex sites 6 months ago. And they said they would sell it if there was no response, and they didn't get that $6 million by January 14th, which is in a couple of days. This is what's going on out there. And let me tell you, anytime you see any kind of information, if you're not double-checking it and making sure it's valid, before you send it on, you know, on Facebook, somebody may post something and you put like, or you put wow, or you put sad, or you put angry. But for God's sake, don't post it on your site unless you know whether or not it's really true. Okay. I mentioned earlier in the show about how tight the labor market is. Well, as a result of that, companies are offering benefits for employees because they want to keep people and because they want to be able to hire people. It is a tightening labor market. So a lot of millennial workers in particular are starting families. They're putting pressure on employers to expand benefits that will help them keep workers and attract new workers. So this is something you should know, because it may be something your company's not doing that you want to ask them to do. Large employers are offering more weeks of paid leave to employees who want to meet family obligations, like caring for an elderly parent or a sick child. Well, now they're even offering the ability to take time off to take care of your grandkids or your pets. You got a new pet and it hasn't adjusted to a new place to live yet? You can take family leave for that. Here's another story that I just really, this made me just go, are you kidding me? A 12-year-old girl and a 13-year-old boy were shot after throwing snowballs at cars. A group of kids was playing in the snow on Saturday in Milwaukee. They were throwing snowballs at passing vehicles. They struck a white Toyota. The driver of the car stopped and fired shots at the kids and struck two of the kids. Now, to be fair, teach your kids not to throw snowballs at a car, especially because if they hit the front window right in front of the driver may lose the ability to see through the windshield. That's really not a good thing to be doing. But what the hell is somebody doing driving down the street with a gun, who then shoots a bunch of kids for hitting their car with a snowball? I mean, really? When we come back, I'm going to give you some more things that you would not know if you didn't listen to this show. It just gets crazier and crazier out there. Obviously, it just makes me cough. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. We'll be right back.
because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Hey, thank you so much for tuning in. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. You're listening to iHub Radio. And Phil, hi, Phil. You called in. What do you got to say?
Oh, hi. Hey, Anita.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Great. I just wanted to make a comment on your homelessness argument you were making. You know, I happen to think that homelessness really should be at the top of everyone's agenda this year, no matter who you are, because this is one of the things where even as an individual, you can make a difference. This is your chance to start at a low level, go out. You want to make a difference. You want to make change. You want to help somebody. Well, I got plenty of people you can help. And so if we as individuals help enough people and then we put pressure on our representatives to give us more help to help them, imagine what we can do in the Coachella Valley.
When you say you have a lot of homeless, what does that mean? Are you involved with an organization?
No, Riverside County is actually what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
I'm not an organization guy. I belong to basically nothing because I would never belong to an organization would have me
okay,
as a member.
So how do you personally make a difference with regard to the homeless?
Well, has anybody ever gone out and talked to a homeless person or asked them about their situation? I mean, you don't even have to give them money, although they probably would ask for that. The other thing that I have also personally done is I will take things like dog biscuits and stuff like that, particularly when they have pets.
Sure.
And these are things that can also be very valuable. And, you know, again, it sounds, I don't know, maybe a little bit on the optimistic side, but, you know, this is a way that really you can go out and help make someone's day a little bit better.
Well,
and hopefully...
I want to thank you for the call. And I do agree with you that we need to at least sensitize ourselves to see the homeless as human beings. They're not just bundles of clothes lying on a sidewalk somewhere. There is one way that everybody who has some time and is willing to volunteer could help. And that is that those who are running the census are desperately looking for volunteers who are willing to go out and help count the homeless. And you don't have to do it alone. You can do it with a partner. But the more we know about how many there are in our local community, the more we can do something about it. So thanks for the call, Phil, and for bringing that up. I want to end the show today with a couple of, and these are, I'm sorry, these are Trump stories, and I can't help it. The president called into Rush Limbaugh's show this past Monday and mentioned that he had had dinner with Mark Zuckerberg the other day, and he said that Zuckerberg told the president, "I'd like to congratulate you." And by the way, the president says to Rush Limbaugh, and this was in front of a large group of people, so I'm not... Anyway, he said, "I'd like to congratulate you. You're number one on Facebook." Okay, first of all, just for what it's worth, the president had dinner with Mark Zuckerberg not the other day, but last October. So I don't know what that tells us about the president, but it's not good. And second of all, if Zuckerberg told him he was number one on Facebook, I don't know what that meant. Because Facebook has, the president's page on Facebook has 25 million likes and 26 million followers. Will Smith has 76 million likes and 79 million followers. And someone I never even heard of named Cristiano Ronaldo has 122 million likes and 123 million followers. Trump didn't even fall in the top 20 in 2018. He can't even tell the truth to Rush Limbaugh. He also today, or the other night at his rally in Ohio on Thursday night, he tried to take credit for the fact that the leader of Ethiopia, who has managed to make peace with neighboring Eritrea and won the Nobel Peace Prize, the president tried to take credit for the Ethiopian president getting the Nobel Peace Prize, saying to his people at that rally, I made a deal. I saved a country. And I just heard that the head of that country is getting the Nobel Peace Prize. What, did I have something to do with it? Yeah, but that's the way it is. Well, the truth is, that's not the way it is. The president's administration does have something going on with Ethiopia about filling a new dam with water. It has nothing to do with having made peace with Eritrea or with the Ethiopian president getting the Nobel Peace Prize. This man is unconscionable in his need for validation. Now, I watched the playoff game yesterday that the Tennessee Titans won against the Baltimore Ravens. And let me tell you, I watched their previous game also. They've got a running back by the name of Derrick Henry. This guy is amazing. If they're, you know, they've got they switched to a new quarterback. They had an early record that was terrible, and they've now managed to get through to where they've got one more game left, and they may make it to the Super Bowl. They switched to Ryan Tannehill as their quarterback. But this running back, Derrick Henry, if you haven't seen this guy, you are missing one of the great running backs who typically, on a handoff from the quarterback, gets 7 or 8 yards on every single run. I also want to share with you that the world's oldest person is a Japanese woman who turned 117 on Thursday. She is now the world's oldest person. She was born prematurely in 1903, the seventh of 8 children. Today in history, in 1915, the women's suffrage bill was rejected. The House of Representatives voted down the right for women to vote. On this day in 1915, it took them, another 5 years to finally get the right to vote? You have the right to vote. For God's sake, go out and vote. In 1932, representing Arkansas, a woman named Hattie Wyatt Caraway, on this day, became the first woman to be elected as a senator. She had been appointed to fill in for her late husband, who passed away during his term. And once that term was over, she launched a reelection campaign and defeated 6 fellow Democrats to be elected to the seat she served until 1945, on this day in 1932. Very quickly, a singles ad, single black female seeks male companionship, ethnicity not important. I'm very good looking, I love to play, I love long walks in the woods, riding in your pickup, hunting, camping, and fishing trips, cozy winter nights lying by the fire. Candlelight dinners will have me eating out of your hand. When you get home from work, I'll be at the front door wearing only what nature gave me. Over 1,500 men found themselves talking to the Atlanta Humane Society about an 8-week-old black lab that they were hoping to get adopted. You guys are amazing. This is Anita Rufus. Have a good week. You're listening to iHub Radio.